Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. Scan number 2552. There we are, 2552. My name is Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA, and I will be running this show tonight. Okay, we have a really good guest on tonight. I'm always happy when she comes on. Her name is Sharon Higdon Jones. That's Sharon Higdon Jones, and she is a licensed psychotherapist, and she has been for over 35 years. She works with individuals, couples, and families and who have experienced trauma and abuse. So I'm always happy to have her on. I see that she is here. But before I bring you on, Sharon, I'm going to read the NASCA, the purpose of NASCA, what we are, our statement. It says here, and I might say that if I'm a little out of breath, I just got into the house running around like a maniac, but I am here. Okay, so that means we're all here. We have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional trauma, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. And number one is educating the public, okay, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, which it is. It's worldwide. It's not just the United States, it's everywhere, okay? It's been like that for so many years. I don't even know when it started. It started since the beginning of time, I think. Number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Prevention is something I'm very, very heavy on. When I give presentations, we speak about prevention. We show videos, all nine yards, because maybe if we could just prevent it a little bit more, you know, if the people had the facts, if they knew, you know, what signs to look for, you know, maybe we'd be able to put that dent in the statistics, as I call it, of child abuse. And, of course, we have children out there, unfortunately, that the abuse is coming from within the house, and that doesn't really apply to those poor kids. But to the rest of the world and to the rest of the kids and to the schools and all the other people that deal with the children, if they knew what the signs were, then maybe more phone calls would be made, even more than what there are being made now. Okay, so I said my little spiel there about prevention because, again, I think that's very, very important. Okay, I'm going to bring on our guest. Again, her name is Sharon Higdon Jones. And I'm delighted to have her on the show tonight.
Thank you.
Are you there?
I am here. I am here. And I'm so glad that you are here hosting tonight, too. So it's always a good time when you're involved. So I'm glad you're here.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I enjoy you, too, Sharon, because you have a wealth of knowledge. And it's so important, you know, to the people. You know, the people out there listening don't have that much knowledge a lot of times, and they need to understand, to be educated. They need to be educated. That's what they need. So how are you? How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, I am okay. You know, I feeling a little saddened tonight. We just canceled Christmas for our family because of what's going on in the world, you know, with the pandemic and everything, and decided it was the best choice to make to our family. So, like a lot of people, I'm making some decisions, you know, I didn't really want to make, and but it's for the best. And it's interesting because I work today and saw clients over Zoom and FaceTime, all these modern things that we can do now. But I was so interested in the wide variety of choices that people are making for the holidays. You know, and I don't know what you're doing for the holidays, but we had decided that we always have kind of a 5-day, the family all gets together and they stay here and it's people in and people out and, you know, people changing sheets and, you know, all that going on. And because of all the variables involved, you know, you can't do this without that and that without this. We just decided that this was going to be a quiet Christmas, so it's going to be the two of us here. So, I think it's the right decision, but it's a hard one.
But Sharon, that could get cozy, you know. My daughter, let me tell you something. I just left her house, flew home, because I didn't know I was hosting tonight's show, okay? So I flew home like a maniac, got pulled over by a cop, and I said, listen, I'm having a problem with my stomach. You better let me go. Give me a ticket, throw it in the car, let me go. He said, go home. Now, that's a true story. But you know what? Yes, it was a Christmas spirit. But I think it's funny, you know, because that was the position I was in. But everyone is crazy this year, including me. Yes. I know no less than anybody else. And I was walking around the stores. I was having a good time, but I was looking at the people, at their faces, because I'm a face person. And either they're very angry or they're very sad, and because of what we're going through. You know, I mean, this is a sad time for everyone, and no one seems to know exactly what to do. Now, what I'm doing in my family, I was going to stay home. I don't care if I'm alone because I like my own company. I really do. I have a cat, and I'm happy, you know. But then you hear, well, it's okay if you have, like, 2 or 3 people, you know, in the house. So, or 5 people, some states. Every state seems to vary. You know, and it's going to get worse as time goes by. So I was thinking about just sending cards and putting gift cards in it, you know, what are you supposed to do? So I'm going to go to my son's, and we're social distancing in the house. We're going to eat at separate tables. We'll have the pull-out tables, you know what I'm saying, TV tables. And but we'll be together. Okay.
Yes.
And we do this on Christmas Eve, by the way. Christmas Day, I might just stay home. On Christmas Day in our family, what we do, we get the whole family together, and we would go to the Chinese restaurant for a huge, you know, smorgasbord, if you will. Mm-hmm. Not going to happen this year, okay?
Yeah.
Don't even want Chinese food, okay? All right, so, you know, I'm such a nut. But that's the way I feel about it anyway. So I'm just going to stay home on Christmas Day, I think, and because there's too much grief and there's too much fear. Mm-hmm. And as God is my witness, I'm standing in line, not even knowing that there was a scheduling problem, and this lady is looking at me. With hostility, mind you. And she thought that I wasn't standing far enough away from her because she's so frightened. And so I pulled back even more, and I thought I was social distancing quite well, to be honest with you. I thought it was over 6 feet. So I went back a little bit more, and I pushed my hand up to the other people. I said, everybody, move back, move back. So because she was so filled with anxiety.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so that's the way the world is right now. So I didn't want to make her feel anxious or even more anxious, and she was getting huffy and puffy. And I thought, my God, I'm almost a car's length away from her. What's her problem? So she didn't want anybody near her. So this is the mentality of a lot, I guess, of people. I saw it firsthand.
Well, it It's hard because any time where something is not really known, you know, where there's some unknown factors, that's when our anxiety level goes up. And what's true is, you know, with the whole pandemic, it depends on which state you're in, which county. I mean, our county here has been under severe restriction. If you live more than 150 miles away, you have to come into our county, you have to quarantine for 10 days. And we have no indoor or outdoor dining. It's all pickup. So it's pretty stringent right now. But I think anxiety is high, and certainly depression is skyrocketing right now because of the fear and because of loss. I mean, we do have to remember, you know, that, 302,000 people have died. And if you think that probably each one of those people in terms of their friends or their family, let's say that at a minimum there's 8 people that knew this person, right, or was connected. And then you multiply that by the 302. That's the number of people who are going to be grieving this year as they hit the first Christmas without their loved one or the one they care about. So I think it's all increasing. I think that we don't quite know what to do because it is such a random kind of thing, right? I mean, I think there's a genetic factor in terms of why some people get more ill. But you know yourself, there could be 5 people there and one person's going to get it, another person's going to get it and be asymptomatic, and the third person's going to die and the other two are just fine. So, you know, we don't know. We can't see the enemy and we don't know how the enemy is going to affect us. And I think that's why everybody's feeling so anxious, and certainly we understand the depression is also because, like I said, the loss of so many people. But, you know, then the amount of loss this year, loss of jobs, you know, loss of income. There's some loss of social interaction with other people, loss of tradition, loss of rituals. You know, we could go on. Very hard for so many people, you know. And we're having to rely on ourselves, and we're a pretty dependent culture. So I think that adds to a lot of people aren't self-facing. Like you said, you are. You like your own company. Although if you have a cat, you have company. But you like your own company. But a lot of people
I like
are
my
not
own
self-facing.
Company. Yeah. I'm fine alone, you know. I mean, I was married for most of my life. Okay. And with my first husband, the father of my children, it was like 12 years, a little bit more than that. And that turned out to be a disaster. Good God. And the second guy, I thought I knew what I was doing. What can they charm us? Women. Oh, my God. You know?
Yeah.
So, he was very charming. And he was into martial arts. And I liked all this. And I thought, he'll keep me safe. Anyway, that one did last, though, 37 years. So, and then he passed away. 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago. But it was a love-hate type of relationship, unfortunately. But neither one of us wanted to leave. It was just there. And but at least he paid attention to my children, whereas the bio father paid no attention to the kids. And I never would have dreamed that, because when I walked into his house, Sharon, it was like walking into the Leave It to Beaver family. I thought I found myself a jewel. You know, he had 2 bikes and he had a Cadillac. I was in heaven, you know.
Yes.
So
I think he married my first husband's brother.
Well, you know, he didn't go to Vietnam during that time. During that time, everybody was in such an uproar because of the Vietnam War, and who wouldn't be? He instead went to Korea, so I didn't think he was in terrible harm's way. And so he came home, but he was not the man that I married before he went overseas, you know. And he was a gambler, and he didn't pay any attention to his kids, and he hid it from me. You see how those men can be so sneaky?
Yes.
So
unless you've lived
through
that, it's hard to believe, isn't it, how clever manipulation can be, you know, how clever secrecy can be.
I know. And I never would have dreamt that would have happened, you know. So the way that I look at it now is, you know, I'm in the time in my life where I'm going to enjoy my life one way or another for whatever years I have left. And if I'm alone for Christmas with my cat, I don't care. Okay? But, you know, a lot of people, they do celebrate on Christmas Day. They don't celebrate on Christmas Eve. So this is like a big loss, you know, for them.
Yes.
And but we have to keep in mind, we have to keep our wits about us. You know, we just simply do. Otherwise, people, of course, the suicide rate has gone up. Children have committed suicide. We had a 16-year-old boy, just a few days ago, that committed suicide because he didn't have that interaction, you know, with going to school. And he was on the sports. Yeah. He was into sports. And he committed suicide. And his father was on TV. That's how I knew that. And I'm sure it was on the, you know, on the internet too, but I didn't see it. But the point is, you know, it's affecting everyone. And it's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. And my little grandchild school, her school was closed down because a kid came in and was not feeling well and tested positive for COVID. And right in her class. And let me tell you something. I was scared. My daughter was scared. And the daughter-in-law was scared. Everybody was scared. And but my granddaughter's fine. My great-granddaughter, actually. She's fine.
Good.
So you never know, like, who's going to get it. Like, for instance, I know of this couple. They're older. And they would go into the supermarkets and in the stores real early in the morning, because supposedly it was clean then. They were allowing people to do this. They were sanitizing during the, you know, the a.m. hours, and then opening up like 6 o'clock. Everybody knows about this. So they went in during that time. They just had each other. They didn't socialize. They didn't do anything. and one died from it. They both had it. They both caught it somehow, somewhere, somehow, some way. And one died.
That's it, isn't it? That's what causes the anxiety, because we don't know. We don't know who it's going to be and how we get it. And
no,
my husband's sister was diagnosed last week, and she is in an assisted living, but it's one of the step things, you know, where they have this level and that level and all that, because she does real well. She has her own place, but and they're so cautious there, and they test, and they have no idea why all of a sudden she would just get it. And she had her symptoms, she's symptomatic, but her symptoms are being very tired and fatigued. It's not any of the other symptoms, which, of course, you always have to worry about, because that way, when people are not active, when they have those symptoms, then they can move into pneumonia, because it's very easy to slip over, you know, with the COVID into pneumonia and so on. But, it's hard. And, you know, what you were saying about the suicide, and it is going up, and like I said, depression. And I think with our young people, one thing that's so hard is, you know, they are not mature enough to have the coping skills to deal with all of this, and not being socially connected and being isolated and being at home, right, which is probably an adolescent's last choice. Spend so much time at home. But even for us as an adult, it's worth struggling to know what to do and how to use our kids. Certainly don't know how to do that. You know, they're not mature enough. Their brains haven't developed. They haven't had enough life experience to know that this too shall pass. Because, you know,
being
an adolescent, whatever it would last forever.
Mm-hmm.
And now as we have matured and grown a little older, we know that this too shall pass. This pain will pass. This time period will pass. We will get on the other side of it. But when you're an adolescent, everything is just so magnified into the here and now, right? I will never find another boyfriend. I will never, you know, it's that all. You know, remember that angst that we had?
Oh, I do. I do remember. I absolutely do. You know, I say that right quite frequently. This too shall pass. I write it. I talk it. I speak it. So now there you are. You're saying it too. So that's good. I'm not alone.
I have that up on my desk. I'm looking at it right now. This too shall pass. It's a reminder. We all have to know this is not forever. you know, we're going to come out into a world that's going to be a little bit different, because I don't know how this experience couldn't affect people and therefore how it can affect our culture. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see, isn't it?
It will be. But there's going to be a tremendous, and there already is, a tremendous amount of loss, okay, of people.
Yes.
And, I mean, this is bio warfare. This is, that's because, we, you know, that's why we can't see it. You know, this is what you call it, is bio warfare. Very heavy into war movies and war situations and politics and all that other stuff. But, you know, with the children, they're the ones that... you know, that are suffering maybe even the most. Not that the elderly can't suffer. I mean, they're filled with fear, too. I mean, or the middle age. I mean, all ages are going to suffer from this. But I think the panic and the fear is now spreading even deeper, okay? It's spreading deeper. And because of that, you know, and because so many people, you know, I'm not going to get political. I'm not allowed to. But the point is, it's going to get deeper, okay, because of things that are said, actions that are taken, wear your masks in your house. Well, that doesn't make sense to me, because now they're saying it's airborne, okay, and they say it to open up windows. Well, excuse me? If it's airborne and you're opening up your windows, well, then you're letting the monster in, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And so the thought of wearing a mask in your house, even, and there's a lot of people who don't want to wear a mask, because we know that when children are sexually abused, we have it right on our website in certain areas.
Yes.
They can't stand, you know, the mask on, because when they were a child, their mouth was covered so that they couldn't scream when they were being abused. I know it happened once to me. I don't have that problem. I'll wear my mask. It doesn't bother me. But there's a lot of people out there who evidently do have that, that it's almost like a phobia to them, and it's fearful, and that even frightens them even more. So this, you know, what's happened to our country and other countries, we're not alone. What's happened to the world? This is a plague, okay? What's happened is that there are so many people who are forgetting the holidays. There is no holiday spirit. How can there be? People are trying to stay alive, okay? And they don't know whether they should touch things. I saw quite a few people wearing gloves, which is a good idea, because on different elements, the virus can live the longest, actually, on metal, okay, like, say, cans, canned goods. I don't know why. I don't know the chemistry behind it. I haven't been given that information. But I do know that it lasts longer on that. You know, and then plastics, and then you have paper. And, I mean, it lasts on everything for a certain amount of time. But, you know, we have to somehow keep the mindset that this will pass. It will pass, because we have a lot of people out there that are very, very strong and very intelligent, you know, who are working in the field of science that will give us the right information. Okay, sooner or later they will. Yes, they will. Okay. And,
they will.
And we do have the vaccines out. And yesterday when I was out, I had to stop into a store quickly. I went over to my son's house. I do visit my children, and we're all fine. And we social distance, no hugging, no kissing, none of that stuff. No, no, no. But they were saying, well, when that vaccine comes out to us, because it's going to go to the, you know, to the, to the hospital people first, to the elderly. I think that were, you know, they're in there too, and then also to the first responders, and things like that. And then it's going to be for the public. It'll be for the public then. And I heard two women standing in front of me and saying, "Well, I'll take it if you take it." In the shot, right? She says, "Well, I'm not going to be the first one." So I'm standing there, I'm kind of laughing. I have a warped sense of humor anyway. So I'm laughing. And, you know, and there's a lot of people that feel that way, though. Those two people represent, and again, the fear factor comes in. Yes, there's going to be, like when you get the flu shot. Now, I'm lucky. Nothing bothers me. I get a flu shot, stick my arm out, go ahead, get it over with, and leave. And I don't have any... any problems with it. well, I'm going to stick my arm out and say, go ahead, shoot me and let me get out of here, you know. And
yes.
Because I think it's better to take it, even if there are side effects, because the side effects, yes, once in a while, a person does die. But on the other hand, the same can be said for the flu shot.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, exactly right. And I would rather, even if I, because they're saying some, you might get some achy feelings, you might run a slight fever or whatever, I would much rather have those symptoms for 2 or 3 days than take a chance of getting COVID and winding up on a ventilator.
That's right.
Right.
That's exactly
so,
right.
You know, I'm willing to do that. I think I shared with you once before. I got sick about 2 months ago and started running a fever, and I ran a fever for about 4 days. Very unusual for me because I'm just not a big fever runner. And so I was concerned, called my doctor. He said, get into emergency right away, because I was telling him about having an achy, you know, body and joints and all of that. And he said, you have a virus. We don't know what kind, so get to emergency hospital. So I went through that whole process of going and being triaged, and then they put me into an isolation room and ran tests and so on. And it was certainly different than any other time I've ever been in a hospital. I mean, because of the no contact, right, and nobody coming near to you. Everything was done on cell phones and loudspeakers, and it was very odd. And I was there for 5 hours. The good news, it was, and they gave me a COVID test, and they gave me the kind that you can get the results in 2.5 hours. And so it was not COVID. It was a virus. It just wasn't that one. But I have to tell you, that experience of being in isolation for only 5 hours, only 5 hours, was enough to say you need to be really careful, because the idea of spending the, you know, any time, length of time, or maybe the end of my days in that kind of a situation with no contact.
Right.
That was, you know.
Oh,
but
I know.
I'm very relieved,
I know.
That it, you know, that I was fine and all of that, but it was just that whole idea is very sad, and I think that's what also brings about fear with people, you know, when they're thinking about being separated from their family and having to go through whatever it is in that stage, if you should happen to get it.
Right.
Certainly does up the whole fear factor.
Well,
and
it does.
It should. I think we all need to be careful. You know, like you said, you know, just be aware, educate yourself, be aware, and then make a decision for yourself, and be aware also that not everybody around you is going to be making the same decision, so you have to allow for that, right?
Right.
Like you said, some people won't wear a mask. Here we're mandated, so I have to say that I don't think I've ever been any place where people weren't masked and distancing, and it's been it's very nice, but that's not true in all parts of the country.
That's
I have a
true.
Good friend who is a hairdresser, and just she used to do my hair, actually, and she moved to another state up north, which I won't say which state it is, but she said she was in a salon and working in a salon, and she said the other women there, and there was a couple of men, said that they didn't feel it was necessary to wear any masks in the salon while they were working with customers. And she said, finally, I had to leave the salon because I couldn't work in an environment where everybody said, it's not really that big of a deal. It's a mild flu. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to take it. And that was a big thing for her to have to leave the salon. But she said, you know, I had to take whatever step I needed to take to feel safe with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we all have to do, knowing that not everybody is going to agree with where we are, but we have to make the decisions and educate ourselves. And I would rather be more cautious, frankly.
Well, when this first started, I had gel nails, okay? And then all of a sudden, you know, it was getting close for me to go in and get my nails done, and they closed. I go, oh, no. And so were all of the shops,
serious.
You know, the nail shops. And yes. You ever try to get gel off? Oh, my God. So
no.
I would use regular nail polish remover. That wasn't working. I was soaking my fingers and all this other stuff, and I got so blasted mad. I took a scissor and cut down all the way to my fingertips. That helped a little bit, less space to worry about, all right? And then I asked someone in the drugstore, what should I have done? They said, well, there's a different kind of nail polish remover. I go, oh? So I went and chopped off my nails for no for no reason, you know, down to my, it looked like I was a nail biter, for God's sake, you know. But what we have to do is just use common sense. Common sense, people, all right? You social distance. You wear your mask. That makes sense to me, to wear the mask. I'm not going to wear it in my house. I haven't gotten it yet. And if the blasted thing looked at me, it would run anyway. She's too tough, and it would take off. So I'm not going to, you know, get myself so depressed where I can't function, you know, where I or like this poor lady who was in the store. I mean, she had on this really cool-looking vest. It was made out of leather. It was beautiful. And I said, I love your vest. And she said, don't even talk. Don't even talk. I go, what? You see, because now they're saying that if you don't sing, now I'm a singer. Believe it or not, mama loves to sing, okay? And but they're saying now, don't sing, because if you have it in your body, it's going to come out of your mouth. Oh, give me a break. I mean, what are we going to do, walk around like robots? We're not going to be able to speak either, okay? Because if you can't open your mouth to sing a Christmas carol, which I'm very good at, and I love to sing, it makes me feel good. See, Sharon, that's what makes me feel better. It used to be running, because I was very much into sports. It very quickly, though, turned into music. My whole family, we're all musicians. And, you know, so I need that. I walk around my house. I don't care what my neighbors think, but one night I heard somebody clapping outside. I go, whoa, that's okay. That's cool. You know. So, you know, I say to Amazon, I say to, you know, play this song, play that song, and on it goes, you know, and I sing right to it and have a really good time, you know. So, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Are you going to sit you're going to have people lined
I'm
up
gonna live my life.
You. Exactly.
I'm going to live. I'm going to live my life, honey. I'm going to live my life because what's that saying they say? That the past is the past, the present is the present, and tomorrow or whatever is a gift. Okay?
Yeah.
Something very similar to that. And all we have right now in front of us is the present, okay? Because we know what we're doing right this second. And you can, you know, it's good to make small goals for the future, but we don't know what the future has, okay? So what I've decided to do is I will be careful. I'm not a reckless person. At this point in my life where I'm going to be totally reckless, maybe a little bit, but not totally. And I'm going to... you know, I'm just going to live the best that I can and say my prayers every night that this craziness goes away, because that's what it is. It's craziness. And it's because our children are suffering. Our children are suffering. We are speaking as one adult to another right now. But we have children, like you said earlier, whose minds are not yet developed. They can't comprehend, you know, what's going on in this world, only that they have to be very careful. And this is scaring the hell out of them too, all right? Like with my granddaughter, now she's 21. I have one that's 21, beautiful girl. And God bless her. I adore her. She's my godchild too, so it's very special. But anyway, the point is, when you're at that age, the 21-year-olds, she's over in Hoboken, she's over in Paramus, she's over, what are you nuts? She says, well, Nana, I'm staying out of the city. You told me to stay out of the city. You love the city. Well, yes, I worked over in the city with the homeless, and I was born in New York. I'm a New Yorker. I was born upstate, and then I lived in Staten Island after that, went to school there. I am a New York person. I love the pulse of the city. I really do like that. But right now, the city is not the place to be. And so what does she do? She goes to Edgewater. That's a stone's throw away, all right, from the city, New York City, Manhattan area. And she, you know, so she goes over in those areas with her friends. And I don't know why she's doing that, but she's got to stop. Because I have to say, you know, because of the closeness of the people, the amount of the people that are in the more city-fied areas, There's more cases, of course, of the COVID. That's just the way it is. But now it's come way out even to the mountains where I am, okay? And it doesn't matter where you live. It's air. The air is polluted, okay? It's polluted, whatever, by the biowarfare. And it's going to work its way wherever it goes, and we have to learn to deal with it. So all I can say to the people who are listening out there tonight is, you know, be careful. I don't care how old you are. I don't care if you think that you, you know, because of your age, you know, be careful. Because the kids, the teenagers, the young adults, they're not careful enough.
Well, they don't, they, bless their hearts, they don't have brains, Carol. I mean, you know, we all love, you know, our young adults and our, especially our adolescents, late adolescents, or you know, like your granddaughter's age at 21. I mean, it's such a delightful, delightful time. But bless their hearts, right? I mean, the brain's not developed until you're 25 years old. So that the whole, that whole section of your brain that has to do with executive function, which means rational decision-making, and, you know, we all know that because, number one, we were of that age, so we remember that, and we thought we knew everything, right? It turned out we didn't know a whole lot of stuff. And so young people are very much in the moment, and they don't have that kind of decision-making that can keep them safe. So I really support your prayers for them. Be smart that one day or 2 days or 3 days of kind of fun and what the hell, is not worth, you know, what the price can be. You know, we've all seen it in the news and so on. So just be careful, be smart. It's going to come to an end. We're going to get our vaccines, right? It's going to take some time. It's going to unfold. And then we can be able to come out, you know, a little smarter, a little wiser than we were before. But, you know,
right,
as I said, time, when it comes to children, adolescents, young adults, is different than it is for us. And I agree with you in terms of the kids and what they're going through, and being away from their peers, away from school. It's really, it's a tough thing. Obviously, the whole abuse issue, because children are at home, they don't have access to people who can help to protect them. We know the numbers for children calling into sexual abuse hotlines has increased, but we know reportment has decreased because reporters are not having contact with the kids. And, you know, we all know about that. We all know what happens. And so my heart goes out to that. And for that reason, that's just one of the main reasons I'm looking so forward to getting on the other side of that. I can take care of myself with this,
yes,
right, to the best,
yes,
of my ability. And, but, you know, when it comes to the children who can't, and the parents who are trying to work at home and educate their kids and deal in the confines sometimes of a small environment, it's tough. We've had 50,000 cases in our county, and one of the areas that's really hard hit in our area is we have a strong Latino community. And because of the multi-generations, which have been able to really do well because you've got grandma taking care of the kids, and, you know, you have a real helpful inter-family culture here, but it's been disastrous during all of this, right? Because,
yes, it has been
living together and so on. And economically,
hold on, Sharon.
Really,
Sharon, hold on a second.
Yes.
We have a 931 area code here. Let me see who this person is. And I have their mic open. Who am I speaking to? This is Carol Levine.
Okay, this is Darlene.
Is that my girl? That's my girl, Darlene. That's who it is. Yes, it is. Okay, now we've got a lot of feedback. Dude, we got a lot of feedback,
yes,
here. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, I know. But anyway.
Sounds like somebody was doing the laundry.
Yeah, I did, didn't it? Yeah. And I'm sitting behind my desk.
Machine.
Help me, God. I didn't do it. But anyway, yeah, we're talking about fear of the COVID. But I do want to, and it's valid. It's valid. I like to speak about things that are valid. And Sharon and I were in a wonderful conversation speaking about the fear factor of people. And also, too, not just the fear factor of people, but also, too, what's going on is reality. Okay? And, You know, it's just a horrible, horrible thing. But we have to speak a little bit about more of the children now. And I just want to read this off here. And I do this once in a great while. The chances of being struck by lightning all right, being struck by lightning, is 1 in 6.2 million. Jeez, I thought it was more, you know, not as many numbers there, but that's the way it is. 1 in 6.2 million. Okay, chances of dying in a plane crash is 1 in 400,000. Chances of dying in an auto accident is 1 in 19,000. Chances of a child being raped or sexually abused is 1 in 4. Now, when you have, and that's from Safe Horizon, when you have those statistics, okay, the world that we live in, that right now, which is not safe for anyone, whether you be child or whether you be adult, we have the children who are living in homes who are being sexually abused right now as we speak. Maybe they're being beaten. Maybe they're being whatever, the physical, the mental, the emotional, the sexual abuses, all of the abuses. And they have this pandemic on top of it all, okay? And they can't get out of their house, all right? There's no place to go anyway. A lot of the places have curfews, you know, and they're coming back. They had gone away a little bit, but now it's coming back because the COVID is worse. But and it's worse than the first time around because it never really went away, and now it's come back even twofold, okay? So these children, think about the children who are in the house where maybe the father's the abuser, sexually, physically, and mentally, emotionally, maybe the mother. We don't speak enough about women. We just don't. But the truth of the matter is that women can certainly be terrible abusers as well. Darlene and I both know that. And, you know, it's, so think of those poor children, that little spirit inside of those children, the little child within, as we say. Can you imagine how they feel? They can't even go outside and run around the house or run down the street like I used to, you know, to get away from the abuses of what's going on inside of that house. Because the COVID is out there, too. So it's like there's monsters in the house and there's monsters out of the house.
Yeah.
And it's a very frightening thing. Now, these are the people that I worry about, of course. We worry about those that are homebound, those are, you know, who are really elderly and can't do for themselves and all this other stuff. And then we have to worry about these children, though, because they all are maybe not the same stories, of course, but they can't get away. They can't get away, you know, to even go outside and get a breath of fresh air because right now the air isn't fresh. So we're living in a very, very hard time. And it's hard to stay positive during this time. The only thing I can think of to tell people when they ask me, and boy, do I get phone calls left and right. But the only thing I can say is think about what was before this. And think about that there is going to be a tomorrow. And just worry about keeping yourself safe right now for today. And it will go away. It will go away. We just don't know quite know when. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. So that's all I can say to people when they ask me. It makes me feel impotent in some ways, like maybe I should have more to say. But none of us can say any more than that other than keeping that positivity, the thought of positive thought. Because, you see, people are so horribly, horribly depressed now, which we touched upon before, during this time, and with good reason. But if you suffer from depression to begin with, before this came upon us, then it's only going to be tenfold, okay, tenfold. And, yes, that's why the suicide rates have gone up. I spoke to someone from the ER the other day. And the suicide rates, people are coming in, they're going upstairs in this one hospital. They have a floor up there where they take the psychiatric. They're admitted to the hospital, and they're treated. And that's gone way up. And the children that are coming into the hospital, the actual calling has gone down. The mandated reporters can't see the children, okay? They can't see the bruising. They can't see malnutrition. They can't see any of those things that they were able to see before because of how everything is televised or on the computer or whatever. And, you know, this is not good. So that's gone way down, the reporting. But the kids that do make it to the hospital, okay, it's not just, I don't mean to minimize this, it's more than a broken bone, okay? Mm-hmm. It's more than a broken bone. Maybe they're beaten all over, not just one bone, okay? And the parents that are, if you want to call them that, and it can be an older sibling too, who rules the family. That was my case. My brother ruled the family. And they were afraid of him. I thumbed my nose at him and then ran. I don't know. But, you know, the point is, you know, everything is just so hard for people to deal with now. So if we as adults are having a hard time dealing with this, think about what the children are going through. It's terrific.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, yeah. Absolutely is right.
And maybe this is a time, too, to put, you know, because of that you can call NASCA and there are other services also you can call in your county, that this is also a time when the parent, you know, the parent that is the protective parent, the one who's not doing abuse, oftentimes, obviously, it's a joint situation, right? Whether it's overt and both parents are overtly abusing a child, or it's covert, meaning one parent is passively sitting by while the other one is doing the abuse, right, for whatever reason. And we won't go into all the reasons, but we can imagine what all the reasons could be. But if that protective parent who is very well aware of what's going on, this might be a challenge to that person to call, get some help, get some guidance, because I'm sure they must feel very overwhelmed with all of this that's going on. And, you know, you've got I'm saying this to any parent that might be listening, that there are people that are there that are available to help you, to give you some strength during this time. And it's difficult. It's very difficult when you are locked into a situation and perhaps or even threatened yourself. So you need that help and you need that support and you need somebody to help be a strength or a backbone for you at certain times. So to reach out, you know, to reach out. And, of course, reaching out is an important part for all of us when we're in fear and when we're in depression, you know, and when we are just at our wit's end. One of the things that we have to do, and I've written out certain steps for some of my clients, things we have to do, which is we have to make those connections. We have to, whether it's by Zoom, by phone call, right, by talking to a neighbor when you're socially distant 6 feet away, we have to have that contact so that we don't feel so isolation, because we know in isolation, and that's when depression goes up, anxiety spikes, right, and people get hurt.
Absolutely.
So reach out. It's so important to reach out and to make connections and not to isolate yourself. It's for your own mental health. It's for your own physical health. And certainly if you have children, it is for them, because you have to be really strong for them right now. You're carrying a lot. My God, I mean, even if there is not abuse in the house, what parents are having to manage in their lives right now, and many of them in an economic crisis, it's so difficult. It's so difficult. So, you know, it's a time for all of us. You know, one of the things that can really do our brains a lot of good in terms of releasing some really positive chemicals is that whole issue of giving. You know, they've done a lot of research, and they find out, you know, it's much healthier for us to give than it is to receive. So this is a time when, you know, it's like reaching out to your neighbor, leaving them banana bread on the front porch with a little note, or, you know, a couple flowers, you know, and an empty bottle on the front porch, just to make that, have that human context. I mean, I think all of us have a little something to give, right? Whether it's a smile or a hello, or it's, you know, because we just all we all need that. We all need to know that we're in a, some kind of a community. Certainly, NASCO is a community, but we all need
Absolutely.
To feel that sense of connectedness and community, because that's how we get through things. We don't get through it by being isolated. We get through it by a sense of community. I notice our Christmas lights in our neighborhood. You know, we live in a little Hallmark neighborhood, and I noticed Christmas lights went up before Thanksgiving. But you know,
yes,
it was
did.
So cheerful because it's like reaching out to each other and saying, "Hello, hello, I'm a bright light." You know, and it's been
I
wonderful.
Love
Walk
Christmas
away.
Lights. Oh my goodness, Sharon, the guy across the street, people stop and look at his house. Okay, and his yard, not just his house. He did such a wonderful job. I wouldn't want his electric bill, okay? But he did, he has more land than I do. I have close to an acre, okay? It's a little more, a little under-evaluated there. But he has more than I do. And everywhere you look on his property are decorations. And that some of them are, you know, like I have a huge, huge snowman. In fact, my lights aren't even on yet. I ran into the house so fast to get on the show. Didn't plug anything in. But he has a huge, huge of this and huge, huge, huge of that. And then all these many, 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 many lights and trees are all decorated. And if I feel blue, and I can feel blue too, you know.
Yeah.
I may be a clown and all this stuff, but I can have my blue days too. So I know. But, you know, I have a good time in life. We have to. What are we going to do? So anyway, I go over and I look at his display because I have lights on my house too. But, you know, I think a lot of the neighbors, because he has done such a magnificent job, they were sort of like feeling like a little embarrassed to put anything up. No, none of us can touch him. But you know what? I don't care about stuff like that. I put those lights up on my house. My daughter helped me. God bless her. And I have my Christmas tree done now and all this other stuff. And because I love Christmas. I love Christmas. And I'm not going to let this pandemic plague, whatever the heck you want to call it, take it away from me. You know, I'm going to have the lights. I'm going to look at all the lights because that makes me happy, too. That makes me happy.
And isn't that a gift? Aren't the lights a gift? I mean, that's why I was saying there's so many things that we can give to one another, right? That gives us
oh,
that
absolutely.
Sense of community. It just brightens our day. And as I'm sitting here, we have a two-story house. I'm looking out, and all the lights, because our house is on a corner, so I'm looking at all the lights. Up and down, we have Charlie Brown trees. Everybody buys these trees, and it's a donation thing. And they're these little trees, and we get it delivered at Thanksgiving time. And then we all put them up in our front yard. And the requirements are to put white lights on them. So you look down the street, right, and everybody has these little funny-shaped trees, because I think it's all the leftovers, and we call them our Charlie Brown trees. And it's such a wonderful neighborhood thing, right? We're just saying, hi there, I'm part of this community, you know? There's
right.
a lot of ways you can reach out and be safe, and that's and doing your lights that you're doing. It's certainly one of them.
Right, absolutely. Darlene, did you have something you wanted to say, honey? Go ahead.
Hello, Darlene.
Did you leave the phone? Oh, Darlene. What are you doing? I want to know what you're doing.
She wants to have a snack.
I'm too busy laughing at y'all. I'm too busy. The tree, you know, and leaning over like that, you know, and the bulb and having
Right. Well, you know what? It's fun. Christmas is supposed to be a fun time of the year. Yes, it is. It's supposed to be a fun time of the year. And I have a very light heart. I'm lighthearted. You know this. Maybe
if
even a little bit of dim-witted. I don't know. Who cares? I don't care. But the point is, you know, the lights.
Hey, Carol.
Yeah.
Hey, Carol. If we were ever on a video where you got to see what was going on, I would be on video and show you the beautiful lights. Just two people across the street are having a competition on who could have the most lights and the most decor. And you talking about beautiful Oh, man.
I
don't ever want to leave that area when I go, man. I said, like, I will stay right here.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. People do that. And when I lived in Dover, okay, in a neighboring town, there was this man who was doing the same thing with his lights. Now, he wasn't trying to show off to the neighborhood. This is his thing. And people were actually stopping. And then, and he was handing out candy canes to the kids, all kinds of stuff, right? They were walking through his yard. He allowed for them to do that. But then all of a sudden, one year, he wanted people to start putting change in a can. And it wasn't for the good of the people, you know, like for a donation or something like that. He wanted people to help pay for electricity. Oh, no. So guess what? It lasted one more year, and no one stopped, or hardly a lot. No, most of the people didn't stop, whatever. And no one was putting any money in his can because no one told him to do it. Okay, so if he thought he was going to make money that way, it didn't work. No, that was so funny. I died laughing. Oh, my God. But, you know, we can find joy. You know, I know it's hard right now. It's hard right now. But just looking at the lights, you know, outside and I don't know, if you dare walk around your house, whatever, just getting fresh air, taking good care of yourself. Now, okay, I can't go have my nails done, so I'll do my own nails once I grow back because I really did a job on them. But, you know, just self-care, as we call it, self-care. That's what we have to do. And keep those very close to you, you know, that you're in the same house with, you know. You know, just keep people close. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Carol. I got company here that'd like to say something.
Go ahead.
Hi, Carol.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. I'm up in Tennessee. I'm normally in Alabama, but I'm in Tennessee now.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to have you on. You know, I'm glad you're saying hello. Yeah.
But
you're in good spirits. Go ahead.
Yeah. You talk about walking around and going out. Where I live, the city lights up the park. It's called Christmas in the Park. And they light up the entire park with all sorts of Christmas lights and things. And they walk down a walking trail and all that to go through there.
Yeah, they've got a thing where you stick your head through to take a picture and you could be, a snowman, the face of a snowman or something, or two different people, you know, a couple.
Oh, my God, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, it is. And you can go to the game, thing in the middle of the park. What's that thing called?
Gazebo
in the middle of the park. And you can sit on the benches. It's got like about 30 seats around it, you know. And I like sitting up there and just looking around and it's playing Christmas music.
That is beautiful. That's beautiful. And you see now we're in this pandemic, yes. But when you see things like that, it lifts the spirit of a person, you know, because with all the beauty that you're able to see, and I'm so happy that you have that. Okay, we don't have anything like that around here. But,
you know what's so funny? Here I am, you know, I miss my grandkids, and then any time I'm there at the park with William, then the kids just start following me, and the parents said, hey. They said, I want to go where she goes. She's fun.
There you go. They can tell my daughter likes to laugh a lot. She's like me. Right? Well, you know, you have to find joy wherever you can right now. Mm-hmm.
I told her, you better be glad there's no snowballs or I might throw one at you.
We're getting a major snowstorm, honey. It's going to start maybe tonight or tomorrow, and it's going to last for 2 days. 2 days.
Yeah.
And if you look at the maps on the Weather Channel, you'll see. The New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania area, we're all like, that's just like all together. And we're going to, I don't know, man. I hope I don't lose my power. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I had gone shopping.
I hope you got alternate power in case.
I don't have a, what do you call those things? People go out and they buy them. I don't have that. But, yeah, I know. You see,
I wish we could get some of your water.
Well, I've got lots of, and you know, my pump is electric too for the well. But I went out, and that's why I went out. I bought tons of water, and because of what's going on, you know. And I just, you know, said, keep me in your prayers so we don't lose our electricity over here, because I bought food because we're going to have the snowstorm. And I don't know how much we're going to have. And I have someone to plow my driveway out. I'm not worried about that. But I am worried about the power. That's going to scare the heck out of me. And I wouldn't be able to run the show on Friday because, geez, maybe Bill's listening. He's in the background. I know he is. Yeah, I'm just letting you know. And I just hope that I have power. So, but anyway, getting back to kids, okay, getting back to the children, during this time, during this pandemic time and all this other stuff, keep them in your prayers too. And for God's sake, if you hear any noises outside, maybe screaming, yelling, like in the parking lot when I was going to my car, this lady had it. She had several little children, and the one was giving her a hard time. I think the kid had to go to the bathroom, to be honest with you. That's what I can get out of it. And she was screaming at him. I mean, look. When you got to go, you got to go, okay? So I think she should have taken the children back into the store and maybe, but let him use the toilet, whatever. But, I mean, it was just screaming, and I'm looking at her, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, does this not bring back memories of being screamed at in front of people, in front of the public, and everyone that was looking at her, you know, everyone was looking at her. So I took 4 steps forward, which made her much closer to me, and she shut her mouth. But I'm thinking to myself, and she shoved the kids in the car, not too nicely either. She got the kids into the car. But I think to myself when I see things like that, well, I know what I just saw now. I wonder what it's going to be like when they get home behind closed doors.
And if he had to go to the bathroom so bad, he might not make it when he gets home and he has an accident in his pants. You can see what's going to happen to him for sure.
That's right. That's exactly right. So, I mean, these kids, I mean, they're going through like a living hell, if you will, because the poor kid can't even express in a decent way to mommy, I need to go to the bathroom. And mommy didn't handle it right. And only God knows what's going to happen. So if you hear things, if you see things, for God's sake, make a phone call. You can call the 1-800-4-A-CHILD. I had mentioned that on Facebook last night on my computer. It's not working on my phone right now. I don't know why. But the 1-800-4-A-CHILD number, you can call that. If you don't want to deal with the authorities in your area, a lot of people don't like doing that. They don't really want to get involved, okay? So that's a national hotline. We have that on our cards at NASCA here. I've handed out hundreds. I've been around so many years. I've handed out hundreds of these cards. And it has right on it 1-800-4-CHILD. That's through Child Help. And we had them on the show. What was it, Darlene, 2 weeks ago or something like that? No, 2-3 or something like that.
2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Because I'll tell you why, Sharon, I called the hotline service at 2 o'clock in the morning one night just because. And I wanted to see if they would answer because you're a hotline service, all right? So
right.
I called, and I got a counselor almost immediately. A little music first, and then a counselor came on, and I told her, you know, where I was from, and, you know, meaning NASCA and all that stuff. And that's how I became involved with them. So at times we do have them on the show. So if you want to call, if you suspect, you know, that there's abuse going on, if you see it, call the police, okay? If you see some kid getting smacked in the head or in the face or just playing kicked or whatever, for God's sake, you call the police department. You don't have to say who you are. Just say where you are. What's what you see. And then let them take it into their hands. And, well, I know they can only do so much, but they can come at least and scare the heck out of the people. And then what happens? They go home? I don't know. See, but the point is make a phone call. All right? And always remember, I got to get this out, always remember that the police department, their hands are, they can only do so much, because then they turn it over to DIFAS or CPS or some of the other organizations, okay? But they're Johnny on the spot, if you will, for that moment, and then they get the other people involved if it's, you know, severe from what they, you know, see. Go ahead, what were you going to say?
I don't think it was
Darlene, was that
Johnny
you?
That was going to say something.
Yeah.
Who's going to say something first?
Go ahead.
You go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that that is such good advice, and also, you know, what you did was even to take a couple steps closer. Sometimes breaking a certain intensity that's going on at a time can be helpful. Not that you're going to solve a major situation, but even in that moment, because a lot of the reasons that abuse is going up right now, too, is a lot of times parents who were not abusive under normal circumstances with all the stress that's going on, right, and the intensity and the demands being made, you know, tempers are short. And so sometimes in a case, if you step closer, even smile, somebody say, oh, God, I know, it's a handful, isn't it, can break at that moment, can break the tension of what's happening. And I'm not talking about the possibility of rescuing somebody or it's going to make it, you know, a huge difference, but I'm just saying in some cases it can break that moment, which is good because parents are under a lot of stress with all that's going on, too. And, you know, we need to mention that. Also, in the back of my book, there's a whole section about prevention and educating parents, and this is mainly for sexual abuse and so on. I'm starting to teach your children when they're very young, right, about speaking up and so on, giving them permission, because, as you know, most children do not have permission to speak up.
I know.
Right?
I know.
And they don't know
That's
how
right.
to speak up, and they don't have permission to do it. And so it's about, you know, about teaching your children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews from an early age. And there's some exercise in there about doing role plays and what you do for very young children and how to teach children about, you know, their private parts and so on. So it becomes just part of a whole natural thing. So not that that is a be-all, but this also goes back to prevention and having children being able to speak up. And, of course, obviously, we know during this time it's almost a moot point. But still, some children are being cared for by relatives and so on. So how wonderful it would be if children could learn to speak up and to tell if something does occur and knows what to do and has the confidence to do it. And they won't do it unless you teach them and practice
exactly.
them. That's just the truth.
That is so true.
Yeah,
that is so true, Sharon. You see, that's another thing. I want to mention that, too. You know, Sharon is also the author of the book Healing Steps, and it's a general path to recovery for survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And it is a workbook, and I love workbooks because it gives you a tool. And I've mentioned this before. Many of us are authors. But, you know, the thing to do, you know, like if I was ever going to write another book, I don't feel like it, but if I was, you know, I feel like I said, blah, 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 I got it all out of me the first time around. That was my memoirs, and there was 315 pages in that, and I figured that's blowing my mouth open enough. I like doing shows and stuff, presentations. But the point is, 2 o'clock in the morning, I've mentioned this before, if you are having a problem, maybe you had a terrible nightmare or something, whatever, and you wake up. I'm still awake at that hour. People call me at that hour. That's fine. But, you know, if you're asleep and you're having a terrible nightmare, a lot of people still do suffer from nightmares because of what happened to them in their childhood, okay? You need something to grab onto. You absolutely do. And, I mean, there's no, you know, no two ways about it. And if you have a workbook that has tools in it and tells you step by step how to handle the anxiety, maybe even to zero in on the fear that is giving you a problem at the time, and to know that this is only something that's happening right now, this minute, you have control over that. I always tell people my way of controlling nightmares when I used to have it is I got to the point I got so mad I was having them that I'd say, I won't say it on the air, and then I'd just roll over and go to sleep. Because I learned that it was, yes, it came from the past. It came from all the terrible things that we've gone through. But that was then, and this is now. And I can control the now because I'm still not in the past. I'm at a different situation, different situation. So the workbooks, you know, that people write, I love that because it helps a person if they're not reaching out on the contact list. And that they don't want to get a hold of Big Mouth, me, okay, whatever. You know, they have a workbook in front of them that they can work with. And I think that's a very good thing. William, are you in the 111 number or is this someone else?
Somebody else. He's talking about place.
Okay, so it's probably Bob. Is that you?
Nope, Johnny Rock here, Carol. How are you?
Hey, Johnny, how are you doing? How are you?
I'm
so glad you called in. We haven't heard from you in a while, and I really am happy when you call in. And you know, December, okay. And I don't say that people should celebrate this with all this stuff that's going around. It's not a celebration anyway. But December is really for the men who were abused as children. That's Child Abuse Awareness Month for the men. Is the month of December.
Wow, so, I did not know that.
Yeah, that was that was actually brought forth maybe 4 or 5 years ago that I know of anyway. Maybe it was brought forth before that. I don't think so though. But you would think that I would know
that. We need to spread more awareness about that, especially myself.
Some years ago, don't forget, I've been on this show for 11 years now or something like that.
I know.
Well. Yeah, it's been a long time. And I was on Lori's show before that, so I'm used to the radio just like you are. But the point is this. During a couple of years there, we had some lady on. I can't remember her name anymore, but she worked with men. Okay, she worked with men. And she ran groups for men. And it was during that time that December was declared the month for people to become aware of the fact that, hey, you know, little boys, they hurt too, and they turn into men if they don't get the help that they need. Of course, Johnny, you know this. But if they don't get the help that they need, you know, they have terrible anger issues. Maybe those are the ones that are beating their wives up or their families up or the ones that are the drunk, you know, down at the end of the bar. Now, I'm no guy. You can tell that by looking at me, but I used to be the drunk at the end of the bar because I wanted to get rid of my feelings. I wanted to get rid of those emotions that I had, you know, those that anger feelings, and because women have it too, but so do men, and that's important.
Sure.
That's important. So
I'm glad I called in. So now I know, and it's not too late. It's still December, but I'm glad I called in when I did because I heard you talking about the 1-800-4-A-CHILD line, and that just popped up, you know. And it's I believe everything happens at a certain time for a certain reason, you know. And I just did that PSA, and you know, I'm hoping that they're okay with it because I never asked for permission to do it. I just did it. And I often wonder, too, what happened when you call the number. And I've often wanted to call a number, but for some reason I just had faith that it was good. And so I've been pushing it for years.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Johnny. And I had done that for a reason, like I was telling the rest of you know, the people on the panel here. There are some that are not that good, okay. Maybe I'll just get a recording. Maybe I'll get back to you. Maybe they won't. I've been in situations in the AM where people are really, really in trouble. And maybe that area is actually near them, maybe by 20 minutes away or something, whatever. And I would hope that someone would respond and send people over, you know. Then I end up having to put it in my own hands and send the police over because I get enough information from the person that I'm speaking to do that. And so I'm on my cell phone right next to my computer, and I'm calling 911. And so we do that in the AM. But the point is that, 1-800 for a child is a very good organization that you can call when people, you know, are having major problems, you know, and they don't know what to do, where to go. They need a place to stay. They need a place to go. And you need answers right then and there, you know, and they do help you. So I'm putting a plug in for that because I've used them for so many years now. On the NASCA cards, you see the 1-800 for a child. And that's why I wanted them on. Yeah, I had them on the show about two weeks ago. Daphne Young was on from Child Help. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you confirmed that and that it's all good because, like I said, I've been pushing it for years and I just kind of had faith that they were. And I usually do verify and back up different organizations to make sure that they are what they say they are. And like you said, there are some bad ones out there. But hey, man, I'm glad to hear they're good. And I just wanted to call in and wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I know I haven't called in a while, but trust that I haven't disappeared. I am out there in the field and doing what I can do, you know.
I know you are. And as far as what you said, believe me, you're still a part of NASCA now. Come on now. So, and
oh, I know.
We have permission.
I know. Yeah, I ain't going
over. We know what I'm saying. Let me finish. Well, we are a part.
Okay.
You know, you're a part of NASCA, and you know we have them on the cards. So we do promote them. Is my point.
Okay.
We do promote them. So what you're doing is right in line. Okay.
Excellent. Great. Thanks for letting me know.
Okay, sweetie.
I'll keep on keeping on. Merry Christmas, everybody. I got to go, Carol. I just wanted to call and say I love you, and I love everybody out there. Merry Christmas.
We love you too, Johnny, all right? You call in more if you can, okay? I know you're busy.
I certainly will. Yeah. I love you.
I love you too.
Bye-bye.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
So, So that was good. I'm glad that he called in. Very happy about that. But anyway, what we're talking about here is so important. And Darlene, I know you're busting. There's something you wanted to say. Where is it? Are you there?
Hi. Yeah, I'm here. I'm just in a lot of pain right now, so I had headed to Bonneville. William, I mean. But
I'm sorry.
What
honey.
I was going to say, boy.
I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you what the name of her book was, and then you said it and everything. So that helped there. And I'm so glad to hear Johnny Rock's voice again. You know, he always seems like, upbeat, let's get this on the roll. You know, let's get this going.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
One thing I wanted to say that maybe, you know, we didn't realize how bad abuse was back in the older days, and so we took it. And everybody, there's a lot more abuse that's going on because it's been unreported. And nowadays, since it's a big ordeal, it's been reported more people's getting caught.
Yeah, I think so, too. That's true. That's true. But as Sharon knows so well, we need stronger sentencing because I know. See, don't forget, I've been trained in so many different areas now, and even on this show, okay, I know people, experts have come on, and they've said, too, that, you think that a person gets caught and they're a first-time offender? Oh, no, honey. They've had many times that they have offended. Sometimes it's like 124 to 128 times, and now you break it down. Because, like, it might be 10 times with one kid, maybe 15 times with another kid, maybe only 2 times with another kid. Oh, you do the math. It's a scramble game, okay? It's a scramble game. Because, but they have.
Many.
Yes. And they have determined, though, that it's between 124 to 128 times, and they're still considered first-time offenders.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Back in the time when I was growing up, abuse reportings were so scarce, but we moved so much over 10 times before I was even age 8. Mm-hmm. We had to move so many times, and sometimes I wonder if one of the neighbors was catching on to what was being done or about to report it.
Sure. You know, look, pedophiles aren't stupid people. You know what I'm saying?
No.
They're many times sick people. I don't know. I have other words for them. We won't go into that. But, you know, the point is they can sense when they've gone too far. Okay, they've gone too far. And if they have skills, so they have, a lot of them have very good skills, okay? So they can pick up and move and go to another area and find their prey. That's P-R-E-Y, prey, you know, their right. Next victims. Yeah. So that might be, darling.
I want to say something.
Speak to Sharon, honey. Go ahead.
I want to say something that happened, sadly, when I was living with a guy who was my boyfriend at the time, and I had my friends, two of my kids over, it might have been all three, but my boyfriend at the time was holding the youngest girl, which was about 6 years old, and he was under a blanket. They had her legs covered, but I was seeing the blanket moving in the strange area, right? So I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm just covering her up real good," and I knew better than that, right? So I went over there, and I threw the blanket off of her and him, and I said, "Don't sit in his lap ever again," and I moved her. And I had called the mom and told them, I think, what had happened. And without the little girl, after she was gone, you know, I didn't want to victimize her just in case it didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? And now she's older now, but she's a teenager. She's ran away from home. She's all this other kind of stuff. And then come to find out, he did molest her.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's been telling and he's in jail for molesting a niece now, too.
Right. And for all the ones he molested that he didn't get caught for.
Huh?
And probably for all the others that he didn't get caught for. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like what Carol was saying. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of others. He was in he said he makes people disappear when they don't testify and stuff, so that seemed like a bad person. So, anyway, I am so glad you got that workbook, and I'm going to be looking for it. I hear your name a lot. I am a Tennessee NASCA ambassador, and I am so glad I called in when you're here.
Well, I'm glad you did as well, darling. I'm glad that you did as well.
Indeed.
You always add so much.
And William too. And William too. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, and William too. And I wanted to say something too, since Johnny Rotten talked about it being, and you talked about it being Child Abuse Month for men. I work with a lot of men who have been abused, and what we know is that it's harder generally for men to come forth and to talk about their abuse. But I have yet to work with anybody who said, "Oh my God, I didn't know that there was actually light at the other end of the tunnel. I didn't even know that it had affected me like it had." So I just really want to encourage any men out there who have not sought help or reached out or shared that there is help, and you can learn so much about yourself. And it is harder. It is harder, and I've just witnessed so much pain, but then so much relief, as we all know, because we've all gone through our own certainly healing and continue to do so. That there are times when it's very uncomfortable, and there's times when it's painful, and there's time when there's an exquisite joy of release and relief. So kudos to all the men out there who are going through their own process. You know, I just have a lot of respect for them.
Yeah. And it's not their fault. And it's not
their fault. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And also, I did want to add something about nightmares, because, Carol, you had brought up nightmares. And, you know, nightmares, it's really interesting with nightmares and flashbacks, because nightmares are sort of designed, I mean, they come forth because they call our attention to something. You know, when we have a nightmare, we very rarely forget it the next day. It's like, oh my God, this thing happened and I don't want it to happen, and so on. Whereas dreams, oftentimes they kind of float away and maybe we'll catch a little image. But nightmares are kind of a way that our unconscious is getting our attention. You know, it's screaming at us. It gives us a horrific image or a scary image or something to really grab hold of. So when that happens, it's really that part of ourselves that's trying to lead us to discovering some facts, to some kind of healing, to something that's been suppressed. And so pay attention. Pay attention. Write down your nightmares. Write down the images. And I think that when we work it through, that's when they get released and they can say, okay, I can go on my way now. I don't have to yell and scream and create havoc to get her attention. And it was my nightmares actually that brought me to my healing, because I had recurring nightmares that I would always wake up screaming, help me, help me. And one day, after having this nightmare for years, I thought, I wonder why I need help. You know, what part of me is needing help? What part of me is screaming, help me? And it was only, and that's what really started my process of healing and recovery. And so I started to listen to that part. And as I went through the early parts of my recovery, I would have that nightmare occasionally. And now I never have that nightmare anymore. I don't wake up screaming, help me, because I listened and I helped her. You know, I helped that part of me that was screaming. So listen to that. When you have a nightmare, keep a journal. Uh-huh. Pencil, pen next to your bed. Write them down to see what is in there. What is that part of me trying to reach me and imprint somehow and get my attention? And pay attention to it. There might be something very valuable there for us. So.
I think that's very, very good advice. I only have one nightmare that recurs, a recurring nightmare. And I am in the woods, wouldn't you know? I don't like the woods. But I'm in the woods. And I'm sort of like, you know, like high up without being on a mountain, and I'm running, and it's pitch black out, okay? You can't see in front of you, all this kind of stuff. No moon, not even a moon in the sky. I'm running like a maniac. And I hear many voices behind me chasing me. And I'm running and running and running and running and running and running and running. And finally, I can't run anymore because there's no place to run, because if I go one more step, I'm going to fall like down a steep cliff or something, it doesn't make sense, but that it wakes me up, because I'm going to fall, and I know that if I fall, then I will die, because I'm high up enough and so forth that I would die from that. That was my nightmare for many years, and that was the only nightmare that I had, and it was always with men chasing me, always. Mm-hmm. So I would
ask you two questions. One, obviously, is what are you running from and why? And the other question I would ask you are, what are the voices saying?
They're muffled.
They're
muffled.
I want you, if you ever have it again, or sometime maybe in a meditation, quiet time, see if you can listen. See if you can amplify the voices and see what they're saying to you.
I will do that.
Okay.
I'll let you know what it is. I have to. I hate ending this show because I'm having such a good time here. I love you guys. You know that. But I just got the 90-second cue. So I can't even give you time to do anything with that. Sharon, you know. But we had a good time. We had a good conversation.
We did.
Yes, we did.
Holidays, happy holidays. Make of it what you will. You know, enjoy, embrace, and feel the joy and the beauty of the lights that are all around us, and the light that is within us.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
And our numbers are at the website if they need somebody.
And to reach out, right, absolutely. We're here.
Yes.
That's what NASA is about. Reach out to us. We're here. And there isn't anything we haven't gone through. So, and you can't embarrass us because we've been through it all, okay? And we're still standing. We're still standing.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
So anyway, I have to say goodnight to you guys. I love you all, and I'll talk to you again very soon, okay? So take care, and God bless.
Good night.
Okay, baby.
You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Radio. Come on in. Okay. There we go.